Cannabis Business Minds, we train and mentor professionals, entrepreneurs, and aspiring entrepreneurs on how to confidently find their place in the legal cannabis and hemp industries. Come on and join us at CannabisBusinessMinds.com. Well, we all know that the hemp industry, CBD industry, is blowing up. And to a point where some of us might be thinking, is there even a space for me? Well, regardless of if there's a space for you, and of course there is, in a crowded marketplace, you definitely need to have a different type of business strategy, focus on marketing, all that brand building stuff. But if you don't have your legal ducks in a row, like let's say you're operating an e-commerce website and you're selling in multiple states and you haven't done everything that you need to do. Let's say that you have seen amazing customer testimonials and you are putting that it's helped your favorite client cure cancer. Well, we all know, and we're going to learn definitely a lot more here about there's a lot of legal ramifications of working in this industry. Highly regulated. FDA hasn't given us all of the guidance on what we can, on operating specifically as a CBD company or a hemp-based company. And the guidance that they've given us is basically, hey, you really can't do a lot. And so this podcast episode, we actually get to talk to a legal expert from the law firm Vicente Sedeberg, not about necessarily what you can and cannot say on your packaging, but what are the legal things that you need to be thinking about in your CBD or hemp-based business. You know, these are tried and true things from a legal professional where she's helping clients solve bigger issues than what's going on in your packaging. But how are you making sure that you are protected in the long run? So please get out that notebook. Please get out that pen and paper because we've got a lot of very interesting things to talk about.
So today we've got Michelle Bodian, who is a senior associate with the law firm Vicente Sedeberg, which is an international law firm. And we get to talk with her today about the legalities of hemp and CBD. So thank you, Michelle, for joining.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Really excited to talk about this.
I am too. It was really great speaking with you offline about all of the work that you've already been doing, the advice that you've been giving business owners. And even just your approach and outlook on hemp, a lot that I think that people coming from the cannabis industry sometimes forget. And, you know, I'd like to start the interview out with you kind of telling people a little bit about why you're part of the hemp and the cannabis industry as a lawyer.
Sure, absolutely. So sorry for the offline boring you. I know I get a little in-depth on the topic, so appreciate it. But I tried to hold something back so we could talk about today.
Awesome.
So my background's a little different, I think, from a lot of people that have entered this space. My background, you know, besides being a lawyer, which may or may not even distinguish me more, but I'm really passionate about conservation and environmentalism. And that's where I started my career, was really a focus on how to protect this earth, how to leave it in a better condition than I found it, and really where I can help make an impact. And that's where I started. And from there, that kind of progressed into looking at specifically agricultural law and some of the best management practices of how you grow and how you can limit your pesticide use. And that from there kind of transitioned to the hemp as being an amazing, wonderful crop that's, you know, renewable. You can make, you know, 1,000 different products out of it. It's great for the environment. It's very low pesticides. And one thing about it that a lot of people don't know, it's actually really great, is actually sucking up contamination from the soil. So if you plant it somewhere where there is some contamination, it'll actually suck up anything that's in that soil. So my background, my interest is seeing this amazing, you know, it is a cannabis plant. We call it hemp, even though it's basically the same plant with a different, you know, THC content. But this cannabis itself and hemp, you know, really can do so much and so much good for this planet.
Yeah. We put it on our trivia because I think when we talked offline, like there was one very interesting thing about what hemp did in Chernobyl, like that huge nuclear power like disaster, and how hemp was actually planted to take away some of the toxins that had had kind of not evolved, but had just been left there in the environment. Did you do any research about that? Because I was so fascinated that it was used as a tool to do that.
Sure. So the term is phytoremediation. So phyto is a plant. And so it's using any sort of plant to remediate or clean up the earth. And so there are a couple other plants that have been successful at this. And so people said, you know, hemp's legal, and we'll get into that later in the discussion. But hey, why don't we try planting this? And it was actually planted in a large scale, yes, at Chernobyl, but also in northern Italy. There was a huge contamination of a bunch of soil up there that was really fertile agricultural land. And those are the two main places they've tried planting this to suck up. It does heavy metal, radioactive material, explosive fuels. It really can suck up everything out of the soil, which, as we'll discuss later, you know, is great for cleaning up the environment. But, you know, if you're consuming a CBD product made from hemp, that means you're potentially consuming any of the metals that was in the soil. So you just need to be careful.
That's like an asterisk. I think we really need to note that, because one way or the other, it can do really benefits for the environment if it's taking things out. But yes, as Michelle's saying, like, if it is grown a certain way and there's pesticides on it, that can be detrimental for our health. And we probably haven't even seen like what that the ramifications could be, because we're still in such a nascent industry.
Yeah, I will say today, actually, FDA just came out with a recall order on a bunch of pet and human food that had high levels of metals in the CBD products. And most likely that is because the hemp was planted in some type of soil that previously had, you know, metals in it, and the hemp sucked it up. I don't think these operators were adding metal to their product, you know, just happened to be in the hemp itself.
Wow. Oh my gosh. And then it was interesting. So I've been, you know, I'm in France, and I watched this one documentary recently about just the water and the water supply, and how France and Paris and where I am in Nice, the water is some of the best that there is in Europe. I'm curious, have you seen any research related to hemp and water
No, I mean, as you said earlier, it's such a new industry. Like, everyone's trying to study and learn in so many different topics, but yeah. I haven't seen anything yet, but it would be very interesting.
It would be so fantastic. And then I think before we segue into kind of getting into like what the Farm Bill was and all of that, I think one really important thing that you said to me online was that we are just, again, at the very beginning of the hemp industry because the infrastructure hasn't been built. Right?
Absolutely.
Could you kind of elaborate on that?
Yeah. So there's all these great uses of hemp, you know, fiber, building material. You know, you can make hempcrete, which is essentially concrete made out of hemp. You can have it. It's a super strong material. BMW at one point is using this in some of their cars. Ford built a car entirely out of hemp back in the day when it was legal. You know, it's got so many uses. So all these great industrial uses, you need some way to make it. Yeah. And here in the U.S., hemp hasn't really been legal for wide-scale commercial use for 100 years. So we don't have the factories today. You know, Europe, Canada, people have been growing this. China, people have been growing it and using it. Well, the U.S. hasn't for the past 100 years. So we just don't have the infrastructure right now. I mean, companies are doing it. They're building factories. We're trying to get this up and running here. But in the meantime, people are, you know, able to process hemp for CBD a lot more easily. You don't need, you know, 1,000 square foot facility to do this. You need one machine on a lab table. So it's just a lot less of a barrier to entry to start processing hemp for CBD versus some of these industrial uses. You need the infrastructure.
Yeah, right. And then especially, I mean, just thinking about building a business, they need the infrastructure. Like, the price of hemp, we've learned over the last, you know, few interviews, has just completely fallen, right? So, you know, if you're pitching an investor, if you're trying to actually start a business and you're trying to build this huge infrastructure, but you don't really know, A, is there a market, or what I'm actually going to be getting, or you don't have a government grant, you know, it also might put some other additional barriers to entry in that. Yeah. But at the same time, I've been working with some more people, I think, in France that have really focused on the environment. So I've been a little bit more in tune to that. Like, 2030 is a pretty big year of, you know, what's going to happen with water, what's going to happen with the environment, global warming, all of that. And it's just, I think it's something that if somebody has an idea or has a background in electric years or wants to start exploring those opportunities. I'm curious if there's an incubator or if there is a group where you could explore those ideas, because if you can get into, you know, some form of technology mirror, like with hemp, then that could help the environment. You would definitely have backing. Like that to me is
absolutely right.
Like such an important.
I think there's an incubator out of New York for these types of ideas. I know Colorado is creating an innovation center related. This is all related to hemp. A lot of states have grants and loans, and my law firm, which I guess I didn't even talk about, which I should, or I'll get in trouble. They also, we help clients apply for these types of local grants and loans. And there's tons of them out there to help, you know, general manufacturing come to a town. But specifically when you start talking about hemp, it's new and exciting. It's great publicity for a town if you say we're manufacturing X with hemp. So there's a lot of opportunities out there for money if you're interested in starting up these.
Oh my gosh, that's so huge. And then one of the other things, so we can kind of like now segue. So you got into cannabis because of the environment, you know, your jump was into Vicente Sederberg, and you know, you're part of the CBD / hemp practice. So first, can you correct me? Are we just saying hemp now and not CBD anymore?
I'd say we're saying hemp versus industrial hemp would be more of the distinction. So 2014 Farm Bill used the term industrial hemp. Mm-hmm. And now the 2018 Farm Bill, we dropped the word industrial and we're just talking hemp. But and CBD itself can be derived from marijuana. So we always have to say a mouthful in anything we're writing of hemp derived CBD, which gets long in a memo if you keep having to use that every other sentence.
Yeah, you need a shortcut for that.
But you got to distinguish it, because hemp, CBD derived from hemp is lawful. CBD derived from marijuana, depending on your state jurisdiction, may be illegal. And federally, it's still considered a controlled substance if it's derived from marijuana.
And so that, I think, is the biggest misconception for many consultants like myself and obviously entrepreneurs, because, you know, I just always think, oh, if it's less than 0.3% THC in the United States, regardless of what plant it was, then it is considered hemp. And that seems like that's inaccurate.
Well, so you actually have perfect timing for this podcast, because yesterday, FDA issued a report and talks about the circumstances under which cannabis can be tested in new drug trials. And one of the end little kind of in their provisions is just what you're talking about. Is it if the product itself is either came from hemp maybe originally, or the end product is less than 0.3%, does that make it hemp? Yeah. And essentially, FDA's position right now is maybe or probably not. They didn't come out with a clear answer, but the way it's sounding is, you know, there's something called the source rule, meaning if it came from hemp or if it's ending up at below 0.3, then it's lawful in hemp. But what FDA seems to be saying is that that might not be true anymore, that it actually needs to be 0.3% and come from hemp throughout the entire process.
Oh, throughout the entire process.
So yet to be seen, because this just came out yesterday and it's a guidance document. It doesn't have the force of law, but it's definitely something signaling a way that this industry is going.
Okay. Wow. I think that's also the big thing. It's like, I guess let's take a step back. So you join kind of the law firm. Your law firm specializes not only in cannabis, but also in hemp. Farm Bill passes. I'm curious when you join, right? But Farm Bill passes in 2018. Were you there before or after the Farm Bill passed?
So I joined about 18 months ago. So I was with the Massachusetts Department of Agriculture. So like I said, the environment, agriculture. So I worked with the state agency for about 5 years. Before that, I was in private practice doing more traditional environmental law. I was working with the state. Hemp got legalized at the federal level with the 2014 Farm Bill. Massachusetts then in 2016 legalized. So I was seeing this great plant and I just like, that's what I wanted. I wanted to get into that industry. Not that I didn't care about being a public servant and all of that, but I wanted an opportunity to just work on that. And so when I was doing the research, you know, I came across my now law firm, Vicente Sederberg. They were started in Denver 10 years ago and they do 100% cannabis, whether it's marijuana or hemp. And I think at this point, they're the largest firm in the U.S. By number of attorneys that do 100% cannabis. So we're a law firm like any other. We have a real estate practice group, a litigation, a corporate department to, you know, form a new corporation. We have all of that. Our only difference is it's 100% cannabis related clients. So hemp and marijuana, that's all we do. And at this point, I think we're up to 50 attorneys with offices across the US. So I was really excited because I wanted that experience. And I said, what better way than a firm that this is all they do? Yeah. So I wanted to jump in. And so, yeah, that was my transition over. And it was right after the 2018 Farm Bill passed. Mm-hmm. And I was joined in an odd transition year because USDA, who has oversight over the farm bills, was still creating their rules and regulations. So it was just a guessing game of, we have the law now that's in the farm bill, and but we're trying to figure out, how is this going to work in practice? How are you going to implement it? So it was a very interesting time to be new to a firm and then trying to figure out all the new regulations and laws together.
Oh my gosh, I can't even imagine, because for me, as just an outsider of, you know, yes, working with clients, being in the cannabis industry, but then just watching the floodgates open to everybody. Like I have followed this hashtag on Instagram, startup. And I remember 2018, 2019, don't see it as much anymore. There's like, oh, do you want to start a business? Here are the five businesses that you can start. Like, be a freelancer, be a social media consultant, start a CBD business. And yeah. I was like, wow, like this is a little bit of a green rush again. And I mean, and then you see it, right? Like you see it in gas stations, you see it in Sephora, you see somebody, like you see these like pop-ups in malls. And so I'm curious if you could talk about just like what the experience has been like watching. Like, I'm curious what the graph has even looked like of, you know, growth of new businesses and kind of new products and where we are today, mid 2020, of how that has it shaken out yet?
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. It definitely seemed like a green rush. Everyone and their mother, their cousin, everyone was interested in this new product. Everyone was seeing dollar signs and trying to see who can be first to market and all of that, which was definitely interesting to watch. You know, we kept getting what we call, you know, potential new clients calling. Mm-hmm. We do like, you know, an introduction call to see how we can help and, you know, explain a little bit about the firm services. And we were doing, you know, four or five of those a day. Mm-hmm. And it was always someone of, I'm a real estate agent, but I want to start a CBD business. Or, you know, there was always someone where their background didn't necessarily on the face of it, you know, seem like this was a natural fit. But, you know, a lot of people had done their homework. They understood the product and they were so excited to jump in. And I know this is one of your topics later about misconceptions, but, you know, we as attorneys struggled a bit of trying to say, yeah, this is exciting. We're excited. But there's also all these laws and regulations and policy. And it's not as simple as everybody thought, because all of the articles you read about say 2018 Farm Bill, legalized hemp, legalized CBD, basically do whatever you want. Yeah. And we kept having to explain, that's not quite true. Like, there's a bunch of asterisks at the end of that statement. And, you know, it's our job as the attorneys to explain, you know, 2018 Farm Bill federally legalized hemp. Then you have each individual state law. States didn't have to allow the growth of hemp. They could prevent it within their state. Even if they do allow the sale of CBD products, they can require specific labeling. They can require registration, you know, so it's not quite as simple as some of these news articles made it seem.
Yeah.
So I think we definitely saw an immediate, everyone wanted to jump to market. And then I think as people started investing and taking the time to see what it was like, we definitely had some of these smaller operators didn't get off the ground, unfortunately, or did, but didn't get enough of the market share and now have dropped off. And some of these bigger companies that have the contracts with CVS and Target are kind of dominating.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it seems that way. And it's interesting to realize, I think that, you know, it's, I guess, a little lesson on law of just like, you know, we've got federal statutes, we've got state statutes, and then we have local statutes. So, you know, especially I just think about cannabis. We see cannabis in California. Okay, sure, you can get a state license, but you have to get a local license before that. And so if you had to compare that to hemp, what it seems like is make sure you understand what's even happening at your state to see if you can operate, if you need a license to do so. And if that's the case, then start kind of building the business plan.
Absolutely. I mean, if you want to operate within one state, multiple states, if you want to go international, you know, you need to understand, is that even permissible? And if it is permissible, is it for all types of products? You know, if you're making a cosmetic product, can you sell a cosmetic internationally? Or what's the THC standard? Internationally, in a lot of places, it's 1% or 0.2% THC, whereas in the US, we use 0.3% THC. So you really kind of want to start backwards before you, you know, traditionally come with a product and you try to sell it. I'd suggest in the CBD space, you kind of back into based on the legalities and what your market is, and then create the product based on where you want to go.
I mean, I think that is so huge. And I want to kind of just talk a little bit about that, because it's an important thing to remember, like, okay, 3% versus 2%. Like, I'm living in France, 2% of THC is
0.2. I'm just going to throw that out there. 0.2%.
Yeah. And that decimal matters, y'all.
That, like, matters hugely.
And also, I just also want to say, like, these are all for educational purposes. So if you're like, please definitely use some of this stuff for insight, but none of this is like legal advice. So make sure that you run everything in this space by a lawyer. They know the law, they know regulation so well. So we're just talking about guidance here, but you know, your specific thing, you definitely need to run it by a lawyer. That's the biggest lesson I have learned as a CPA working in this space, is like, you need people to kind of look at your stuff. But so, like, imagine 0.2% THC is considered hemp in France. 0.3% THC is considered hemp now in the United States. So one question about that, have states ever limited that amount? Like, oh, even Oregon wouldn't do this, but like, let's say, oh, I'm in Arkansas. Actually, hemp for us is 0.1%. Like, would you ever see that?
The only context that could happen is if CBD was under a state's medical marijuana program, because I think in, say, for example, Iowa, I think is the right state, their hemp CBD is, Indiana. Mm-hmm. No offense to anyone out there, get those two confused. So their CBD is sold through the medical marijuana program, and the medical marijuana program does have a lower THC content. So that would be the context.
So I think just point everybody, if you're listening to this, like, we always talk about this. You need to understand the rules and the regulation. Like, go back to that, because you might hear one thing, you might read it in a Forbes article, and you have to go back to the letter of the law and the regulation. Because, yeah, if the medical marijuana program in Iowa,
Indiana. See, it's easy to
get. I get them kind of confused. Apologies, but if the medical program is more strict than the federal, like, and you start producing something, you're probably going to lose your license, have huge, you know, like, if you raise money, all that kind of stuff. And so, again, starting your business, knowing the law, I think is huge. But I'd like to just, like, kind of strategize with you about, you know, the importance of knowing where you want to go, right? Like, you know, one of the things that obviously is of interest to me is this international market, this international focus, where, you know, just reading about kind of hemp strategy and CBD strategy, it was a recent article, I'll put it in the notes and I'll send it to you as well. But, you know, why right now focus all of your energy on California or Oregon or Washington? If you're a CBD company, why not try to focus on other markets, because it's so new to them? And so offline, you and I were talking about, you know, some clients are thinking about going international. And so I guess my question really is, you know, what insight do you have for somebody that's kind of building that strategy of where they want to go? Because you can't start a business and say you want to be in 25 department stores tomorrow, but you also want to.
You can, but I imagine you would advise against that.
I'm like, oh, that's going to be really hard. But how do you do that? I mean, and that's a pretty hard question to answer, but any guidance on maybe what questions somebody should be asking themselves if they're thinking about, you know, expanding to new markets?
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. I think it's with anything, I would say start small and grow. Mm-hmm. So whether it's you're starting with one product or five products or 20 products, you know, start with one, see if you're successful, start with one market, start with a state, a single state, make sure you can comply with all the rules and regulations. That's going to be a crash course in and of itself of how do you apply, what license, how do you sell? And then once you're successful in that market and you've built up that brand reputation, then you have the opportunity to grow, whether it's with other states in the US or going international.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's so good. We had a question yesterday that was like, what would you tell somebody if they were just getting started and wanting to start the business? And the Kareem said, oh, I would tell them, if they've never done it, get a job in that business and really try it out. And I think that same methodology is a great way to kind of apply. It's like, just do it well in one spot, focus there, see what's working, see what's not, MVP, minimum viable product, minimum viable market, right? I think that's huge. I think oftentimes entrepreneurs just have this like, whew, I wrote my business plan. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
And you know, there's so many directions to go where you really just need to focus on just one, build one bridge right now. So I think that's
mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Can you talk to us about, okay, future of retail? You know, we see brick and mortar has changed so much. We've seen that, especially in the cannabis industry, you know, online delivery is happening more, like states and counties are allowing the delivery to actually happen because of COVID-19. But prior to even this pandemic, we were seeing so much of, you know, brick and mortar closing down. And so e-commerce being, you know, the way for many retailers outside of hemp, right? Of really kind of focusing their attention. Can you talk to us about what you've been seeing in the retail e-commerce space?
Sure. So I think you're definitely right. Brick and mortar in general is going, and then specifically for CBD, you don't need a whole, you know, there are plenty of brick and mortar stores dedicated 100% to hemp products and to CBD, but then you also see gas stations and bodegas with a shelf. I mean, you don't need a lot of square footage within a store or for a full store to be selling these products. And so I'd say the majority of CBD brands are starting out completely online. There really is no presence in brick and mortar, which also makes sense given the price of some of these products that are being sold. One thing I would caution mm-hmm. is that, you know, some of these brick and mortar stores need to get a registration depending on what state they're licensed in. So you could think, oh, okay, so if I'm selling online and I don't physically have a store in Louisiana or Texas, that I don't need to register my website. And I'm going to add the huge disclaimer that says not necessarily. A lot of states, including Louisiana, are passing laws that say if you sell any product in our state, you, even if it's just online and that's the sale mechanism, you need to register your domain name. And that, you know, is unlike a lot of other industries where there aren't laws requiring Amazon before they sell a shoe to have to register.
Do you need help with 280E strategy, cannabis regulation, and making sure that your accounting, your inventory, your cash management are all squared away for your cannabis business? Well, if you do, I've got you covered. Head on over to Cannabis Business Minds and check out Cannabis Finance Bootcamp, an online training that gives you the tools, the templates, and the training to help you in your cannabis business and your cannabis business needs. And because you're a podcast listener, you can enter in the promo code CBM2030, CBM2030, when you head over to checkout. You get $25 off your purchase price.
So we don't know if this trend's going to continue and other states are going to come online and have this requirement.
Yeah.
But if they do, that's going to be a huge burden, you know, to these online retailers. You know,
yeah.
How they're going to enforce is a whole other question. It's anyone's guess. But at least for now, you know, we always advise our clients, obviously, to comply with the law. And if the law says you have to register, you need to register.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I kind of believe that the trend, I hope I'm wrong, but my thought is that the trend would continue because states are already suffering so much with their budgets. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? They're suffering tremendously. So they're trying to figure out how to get out of the deficit. We already know that, you know, think about it, like property taxes. So if I don't have, if I'm not paying, I mean, if you're renting, it's a different thing. But if I don't own as much real estate, I'm not paying property taxes. I'm not paying, you know, maybe sales tax would be something else, but they're losing probably tax revenue. So I would imagine if they were smart, which would be very disruptive for business, especially those that are just getting started, they might try to do that. I mean, I think about it in Europe, think about how in the EU, they're really like pushing down on Facebook and Google and really trying to make sure mm-hmm. that they're access. So there's this whole digital area. And I think I'm part of it too, where I sell online courses, right? Like, what is that? Is it a service? Is it a product? And there's that gray zone of taxation that I think when you're building your business plan, you really need to kind of assess the risk and what's, you know, the letter of the law and what that financial impact could do for you as almost as part of your like administrative checklist. Like that's crazy. I mean, I guess they're adapting, right? The states are adapting.
Right. And I mean, and you said nail on the head, you know, taxation, but it also, you know, not just looking at states as being greedy, but it also is consumer protection. So in states, if you have, like we were talking about the heavy metals, if a product's made in a state or sold physically in the state, you know, from a brick and mortar store, there's all these testing and labeling and all these, you know, requirements. And so their concern is, you know, they're not going to be able to protect their citizens in state if all these products are coming online and they're all unregulated. So they are not only looking for the cash, but also trying in theory to protect the citizens. So someone doesn't have a CBD product, has a bunch of heavy metal in it, you know, which isn't good.
That is such a good point. Cause I do, I think I always focus on the numbers. I think that's so essential. I mean, when you think about regulation, it's all about consumer safety. Yes. Benefit is that there's going to be some dollars to it, but yeah, talk. And I guess it's because you're a regulator, or you were a former regulator and a public servant. We talked to somebody, executive director in Michigan yesterday, and you know, he led with the health aspect, and it's so true.
Yeah.
You know, you see what could go wrong. You saw what happened with the vape crisis, right? Of, you know, non-tested product that was on the illicit market, getting into the hands of people. So that makes a lot of sense. And thank you. That's a very good point. It's not just,
I mean, it's definitely sense. Both. Don't get me wrong, but.
I think it's huge. I think it's a really big, a big message. And I think health is, you know, it seems like a very big priority, which is lovely, for states, right? So I think that's, it's pretty big. I'm curious. So we kind of alluded to it, but I want to get into some of the things. I mean, you advise and consult clients. You've been working in this space for 18 months, but had done a ton of stuff prior. What are some of the big misconceptions that you see entrepreneurs having?
Yeah, I think I touched on it. The biggest one is that CBD is 100% legal. You can sell it, make it, do whatever you want with it. And I think that comes from the fact that the 2018 Farm Bill did legalize hemp, and it did remove it from the Federal Controlled Substances Act. So that part is true. But what a lot of people don't pay attention to, the fine print that's preserved FDA's authority. So the U.S. Federal Drug Administration still has authority over regulating food, drug, dietary supplements, and cosmetics. And so whether or not those products contain CBD, FDA still has authority to regulate them. So if the product does contain CBD, FDA has come out and said, you cannot add CBD to food and dietary supplements. So that's at the federal level. And then at the state level, which I know is a big, big thing in and of itself, but then at the state level, it was removed from the Federal Controlled Substances Act, but then each individual state needed to then go and change their drug laws. So just because it's federally legal doesn't mean it's legal in every state. So each state then needs to change their controlled substances law, and then they need to allow the products to be sold. And some states said you can sell whatever, however, and some states have said you can sell this specific product or not this specific product, or you can sell a food product if it's labeled a certain way. So it's really not this blanket approval that everybody thinks it is.
Yeah.
Or a lot of people.
Oh my God. I bet it's just like such a nightmare to have to do the reconciliation of like what states say you can do and what you can't do. And
we have so many charts, I'll tell you.
I bet. Oh my gosh. I really bet that. I mean, also I think what's interesting, which allowed kind of the commerce to flow a little bit more than cannabis obviously has, is that interstate commerce seems like, yeah, you can sell, like we just talked about, okay, you might have to register and look into the kind of ramifications of selling in a certain state, but you can now, because it's removed from the Controlled Substance Act, if I'm an Oregon-based company, I can sell to somebody in California legally. Has this ever happened where states have tried to put any limits to interstate commerce?
Idaho. Idaho is the best example. So Idaho did not change their drug laws to allow hemp.
Idaho is so sorry. If somebody goes to Idaho, please talk to us about how we can convince them. But like, really?
So what happened was they didn't change their laws. So fine. Producers said, okay, I'm not going to sell in your state. No problem. But I'm still going to drive through your state. You know, I'm lawfully grew in one state. I'm going to deliver in another state. I'm driving through. And what happened was, which it's been a huge lawsuit. You can look it up. Big Sky Scientific was pulled over truckloads worth of hemp and arrested and said, this isn't actually hemp. In our state, we consider this marijuana. So these are criminal charges. We're filing them. You're arrested. And it's been ongoing and ongoing. And eventually, I believe the criminal charges were dropped. Mm-hmm. They never end up getting their hemp back. And at that point, it's been so degraded. I don't think they could have done anything. So they lost all that revenue. And then the general counsel, so the head attorney for USDA, actually had issue an opinion letter saying they believe, based on the language of the 2014 and 2018 Farm Bill, that mm-hmm. even if states don't want the products being sold in their states, they have to let the trucks through.
Okay.
Which was a great opinion.
That's a great opinion.
Which actually ended up spurring Idaho did pass an emergency law that says it's still not lawful in our state. Please mm-hmm. stop arresting people that are driving through.
Wow. I think that just shows the power of states. You know, I mean, states are so different, and also the power of getting some guidance from a regulatory agency at the federal level, what that could do. My God, that's crazy. Because I mean, I think what's happening in California, cannabis related, is that so many counties have banned cannabis. And so I think that's a big discussion of like, what if I'm a delivery service and I wanted to deliver to somebody in that residence? And yeah, I think that there's so much complexity operating in both these spaces that we kind of take it for granted. We're like, oh, that should not be hard. Like it's legal in these two states, Oregon and Montana. Let me just try through Idaho. And in that case, it wasn't.
Right. And, you know, another, I could keep going with anecdotes and all this, but, you know, in Florida, they recently allowed hemp and CBD. They had a new law that was passed. But one quirk of Florida is that it's a huge agricultural state. So mm-hmm. they have agricultural weigh stations. So before you bring any sort of crops into their state, you have to stop at one of these stations. And if you don't stop, that's an arrestable offense. And, you know, obviously there's all these parameters of who has to stop and all of that. But if you're driving a truckload of hemp into Florida and you're from Washington, Oregon, California, you might not be familiar with this. It's not called out directly in the hemp law. Yeah. Because it's just an existing law for any agricultural product, and hemp's now an agricultural product. So, you know, an everyday person might not know they have to stop at one of these weigh stations.
Oh my gosh. Well, okay, so this is what I want to get into is like, you work with businesses. So what are things that business owners should be thinking about? Like
you've got a contract, contracts. I will say contracts. There's so much in this space right now that's being done on a handshake, or there's no set industry terms yet. You know, cannabis is still evolving. Hemp industry is even newer. You know, if you're selling a car, you can just go look up online, how do I sell a car? And there's, you know, a checklist of what you need to do, get your registration, transfer title. That's so set. Everything is so evolving in this space right now that there's no blueprint. So you really need a contract to protect yourself and your business and really tailor it to your specific needs. You can't get something on, what's the website, LegalZoom.com. Like you really need an individualized agreement between you, whether it's your supplier, your transporter, if you have a host of, you know, delivery people or subcontractors, you know, whoever it is, a sales team, like you really need to protect yourself and your business through a really good contract.
Oh yeah. I made a list on Cannabis Finance Bootcamp of like all the different types of contracts that you could need, like as a business. And there's probably, I mean, if you really like looked at the laundry list of it, I mean, it's more than like 30, because we're talking about like when you create your business, you've got all the legal documents that are associated with that. If you have partners, you've got a partnership agreement. If you have employees, an employment agreement, right? And then you just can go down and down and down. Those are the things you need. But what's inside the contracts is so important, because the difference between an and or an or one word could make or break everything. And it's so important to really get a contract. Like I've had an example where I didn't sign a contract and it bit me in the butt. Yeah, I definitely have. And that's like, it was the very beginning of my entrepreneurial career, you know, taking things not as seriously as I do now, because I didn't realize the severity of when you own a business, like you are building an asset, you need to protect that asset. And the way that you protect it legally in the United States, pretty sure most countries is through contracts and insurance.
Absolutely. And if you're starting out a new business relationship with someone and they say, fine, we don't need to do a contract. That's not how I do business. Really take a moment and pause and think if this is the person you want to be doing business with.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's an interesting thing because there's something, you know, I would love if anybody's listening right now, or if you're listening and later on, please comment, like when you do business with somebody, because this is something also culturally, like, right? Like, how do you develop that business relationship? How do you get to the point of, okay, well, we've talked about some terms, let's shake on them. Now let's bring our lawyers in, let's bring our advisors in and actually ink the deal. Like, how do you do that in your business? And if you don't do that in your business, why aren't you doing that in your business? I would love to know. We can look at the very end, but I think it's really important. I think that maybe for new entrepreneurs, one of the things that could be, you know, holding them back from doing that is just not knowing how business works. And I hope that we can kind of, you know, I think you've kind of educated, like, these are some of the ramifications. And in fact, I think you were working on a blog post about I don't know if it was, they didn't sign a contract, but do you have, do you know what I'm leading into?
Okay. Sure. Yeah. So I'd say the importance of contracts are to protect the parties. And then it's also, if something goes wrong, you can point to what went wrong and you can point to it. You can point the judge to it, or you can point the jury to it of say, look, the piece of paper says I was supposed to get, you know, 5% CBD content or whatever it is, and I didn't. And here's the contract that shows what I was supposed to get, and here's what I didn't get, and pay me back all my money. And so you're right, we were doing, my firm and I was drafting a blog about some recent CBD related litigation, because it's definitely, you know, the time that everyone, you know, it's kind of a natural progression of, you have this new industry, you have these great products, everything's out in market, then the lawyers get involved. Not that we're not great as a profession, but, you know, whether it's a product's liability, you touched on insurance, for example, like, you know, we definitely would recommend to our clients getting some product liability insurance. You're seeing a whole bunch of CBD related class actions. So a whole group of people that have gotten together to sue, you know, there's been five or six, and say, you know, your product label says it has this percentage of CBD and we tested it in an independent lab and it turns out it didn't. So we're suing you. We're suing you on behalf of everyone in the United States that's ever used your product. And some insurance could protect you there, which is an aside, but there's a lot of these types of lawsuits that are getting out there now. You know, you mentioned California, Kern County, a farmer there had 500 acres destroyed by 500 acres. Let me say that again. That's a lot of hemp, you know, mowed over and destroyed by local state officials saying they weren't growing hemp, alleging they were growing marijuana. The landowner and the farmer is saying, no, I was actually growing hemp. But think about how much loss of revenue and what that impact to the business is, because maybe he and state regulators weren't on the same page about what was lawful in the state of California. So he's suing to try to get back some of the money. Like I mentioned, you know, there's a lawsuit going on related to, you know, the wrong amount of CBD content. So people are growing hemp for the CBD content. You can get 0.5% CBD, you can get 40% CBD. There's huge variety of how you can grow this plant and what you can get. Someone paid someone $500,000 up front to get this product. They got all the product. Turns out, you know, it's almost worthless because it barely has any CBD in it. And so now they're suing to try to get back all that money because they paid up front. So we also would say, don't pay up front. You know, take some of the product, test it yourself. And then, you know, if it's good, pay the rest of the money. Yeah. So there's definitely a lot of litigation going on where contracts, you know, would help protect, or at least it says what you were supposed to get.
Oh my gosh. I think it's like, you know, in business, do due diligence. If you're buying a business, investing in business, if you're starting one, due diligence is your business plan, the market research. If you're working with somebody, due diligence on them. And also with new customers, what's your due diligence? Like, I know you might be so excited for a sale, but making sure that you have, I mean, customers and vendors, that you have, you know, your own policies on how you onboard a customer, what kind of contracts you'd even expect to have with them, POs, the invoices, all that. But yeah, as Michelle kind of talked about with the labs, like having a little control in place where you test new product if you've never worked with somebody, especially if it's that big of a sale, like it's a huge sale.
Right. So start small. That's our advice. You know, if it's a new business relationship, start small. You know, yeah, you might be really excited because it's a great deal, but try to think about why it's the great deal. So start small, see how the relationship works. And if it's successful and, you know, you build that level of trust and confidence, then get the relationship really full blown. One of the other cases we talked about, which is so relevant in this space, 0.3% THC, hemp, 0.4% THC, federally controlled substance, and illegal marijuana. So the difference of knowing what THC percentage you're getting is huge and really could make the difference between, you know, being arrested and not. And that happened in one of these lawsuits I'm referencing where somebody shipped a bunch of extract to a company to extract. They were promised a non-detect level of THC. It ended up coming back with a high level of THC, and the landowner and the business owner ended up being arrested. So there's real consequences to this industry if you're not sure who you're partnering with and them to deliver what they promise.
Absolutely. So if you're thinking about even getting in this space, it's like building your budget is like you need to have a legal reserve, like period, like to work with lawyers. And then also when something comes up, you know, to kind of tap into them. I think that's so huge.
And a lot of our clients, you know, up front say, you know, we don't want to pay for these contracts, or we don't think it's worth it, or we can do it on our own. And we always tell them, if you want to be in this business in 5 years and 10 years, you need this to protect you and to build your business. If you want to just get in quickly, make some cash and get out, yeah, you can probably get away with a handshake and, you know, hope and a wish. But the operators that are going to be here long term are building up that protection for their business and their brand.
Yeah, absolutely. And I hope that, you know, you're in this if you're building a business for the longer term, right? Like, you know, if you want to make a lot of money, maybe go to Vegas. But I think, like, if you're, you know, building a strategic plan, like think about it, if it's an exit, whatnot. But yeah, you're in this for a while. And there's going to be ups and downs. I think the industry itself right now, I mean, we've talked about that yesterday a little bit, of just kind of consumer preferences. International, you know, before we kind of wrap up I was like, am I going to give you the speed round? If you want it, let me know. You know, before we wrap up and see if there's any questions from our audience, like, talk to us about what you have seen international. If you've seen anything, what's interesting there for you?
Sure. Yeah. I think a lot of the companies that have gotten into the space and feel like they have a foothold in the US say, that's great, we want to expand internationally, which there's definitely a huge demand and a huge market. One thing I would just caution, as we kind of started the conversation, a lot of these international markets have been doing this. You know, it's not as if America discovered some new great product. And I can't even think of a good analogy. Like, it's not like the US is sending Coke down to South and Latin America for the first time. Like, you know, these countries have been growing hemp. They're looking at us as the newbies of saying, you know, okay, we've been doing it longer and better. So if you're trying to go to the international market, I think you really should do your research on what products are available in those countries and how you're going to distinguish yourself. Yeah. I mean, certainly also knowing how to comply with their laws and, you know, import, export and all of that is, you know, I'm assuming that's already done because that's such a basic first step. But once you have that understanding, you know, how you can differentiate yourself in the market.
Yeah. I mean, it's been so interesting. So just like being here and trying to figure out like, oh, like what is the wholesale market like? If I could help brands that if they really had set up the way that kind of we talked about, like, do you have products that are 0.2% THC? And I wanted just to point out, you said like the difference between like 0.38 and 0.4% could be jail. But isn't it true that the difference between in the US 0.3 and 0.31% could be jail at the same time? Like, you, it's like, I would imagine it's like the decimal matters.
It absolutely does. And making sure how you're testing, whether it's Delta 9 or total THC, you know, we could do a whole 5 hours and we'd have to bring in a chemist. But there's, you know, even how you get to that number of the methodology, you need to be precise on.
Oh my gosh. I think that's definitely another like masterclass. Like, it would be very cool. I'd be like a little overwhelmed. I'd be like, somebody else host this. There's so many kind of numbers and kind of nuances to kind of what is in this plant, like 483 compounds. Like, that's so much. But one thing I've noticed is that there is such a lack of what I've seen, right? So south of France, just can speak to that. I can't speak to any other country at the moment, but of products. And you know, the guys that I've talked to that have these shops, it feels like, you know, 5-10 years ago in California, and they've got, I was like, are you testing for anything besides CBD? No. It's like, oh, that's interesting. And they're like, we really need new products. And so I guess I'm also just so interested, but I haven't done, you know, I just found the World Trade Center. I'm going to start kind of doing the research in the next few weeks of like, how does that even work? And I think that's a really important thing of, you know, what Michelle said, and I would like to emphasize it. It's like, just start small first. Like wherever you are, try to, you know, we always think about 10X in business, like 10X what you're doing, but 10X it, you know, at your micro level and figure out really if it's working. So I'm excited to kind of figure out for myself, like if I can even figure it out for France. It's just, it's so fascinating.
Well, I would throw out there in France, if you're trying to export, there's also international treaties. The UN is actually voting in November, whether on CBD and whether or not there should be a change to the THC, you know, percentage that is allowed, because international treaties also do control, just to add another layer to the already complicated web.
That's though, but I think it's interesting because like if a business entrepreneur is listening, like I think we're more interested in like building our business and like not thinking about all those like ramifications. But if you don't think about those ramifications, that web, like you're building your foundation, you want to make sure the foundation actually works. But yeah, if anything, that just shows how complicated this space is.
Yeah, definitely don't wait to call us or some other attorney until you're in trouble. Definitely come to us at the start so that we can help you avoid it. Because we don't love getting those panic calls of, hey, my driver was doing X, he just got arrested, what should I do? And we definitely still are getting those calls. So it's definitely still happening. And we just want to make sure people are protected. So please talk to some attorney first.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not going to throw you the speed round, but I just want to ask you.
Oh, I was ready. I can do it.
Oh, you were? Okay. So what is one piece, you've already given us so much knowledge, but what is one piece of advice you would give somebody that is just starting their business in hemp?
I would say just be cautious your source material of where you're taking advice from. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of information out there in the internet. There's a lot of really great resources, but there's also a lot of people and, you know, whether it's part-time or not full-time journalists, not to disparage them, but a lot of misinformation out there. Mm-hmm. So I would say if you found one random article that says the THC standard in the US is 0.5 rather than the 0.3 we've been discussing, just really be cautious on where you get your information. There's a lot of great nonprofits and advocacy groups out there, you know, the Hemp Roundtable, Vote Hemp, you know, there's a lot of great sources and there's also a lot of not so great. So just really try to understand, you know, the angle behind the information.
Yes. Oh, that's so good. Somebody posted on LinkedIn, where do you get your cannabis news? I was like, from the regulatory body. Like, definitely. That's a really good piece of advice. Second one, what drives you? Like what motivates you? If you have to put it down in one thing, like why do you get excited every day to wake up and do what you do?
Oh God, I wouldn't have agreed if I knew it was this hard. I would say conservation.
Huge.
Okay.
That's
huge. I mean, I'm excited. I love helping businesses related to CBD, but I think the future of the market is going to be on these renewable products. I think our water bottles in the future are going to be made from hemp and no longer made from plastic. And I'm just excited to try to help the US make that transition.
Oh yeah. The world needs it. So I just think about the single time use of plastic in the United States and just like, even like a small shift, like the water, like water bottles, right? A small shift in kind of when the infrastructure of hemp can, you know, really start evolving. And I don't even want to say when, like if and tomorrow, like there should be kind of things that are working on it. So I hope that this is inspiring people to really kind of get involved in thinking more beyond profit and thinking more even beyond your people, but really thinking about planet. It's so important that the things that we're working on in these next few years, I mean, it's really critical for where the world's going. So I think that's a huge why, Michelle. Last, not least, what do you think it's going to look like when cannabis is fully legal in the United States?
I think those farmers and those businesses that have been in the hemp space are going to have a huge leg up. I mean, obviously those actually directly working with cannabis as well. But I think one distinction and, you know, kind of the role I play in my firm, first and foremost, this is a plant. You have to know how to grow it successfully. So I think anyone that has been working in this space and has that knowledge of how to cultivate it as an agricultural product will have a leg up.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's huge. We had one question from the audience from Portia. She asked, you know, what would you suggest to hemp-based companies that want a lawyer for their businesses? But for example, in our state, Kentucky, there aren't any lawyers that know anything about cannabis or cannabis laws.
Sure. Absolutely. So I'd say the cannabis space, a lot of the firms like ours operate throughout the U.S. So I'd say, you know, just because if you're trying to find someone in Kentucky, you don't see a firm, that doesn't mean there aren't people that can do the work. For example, we do work in all 50 states. Mm-hmm. We also do work internationally. So we have relationships with attorneys in, you know, almost every country throughout the world. And we have, every country throughout the world and every state in the U.S. We're able to practice law. So awesome. If you need help in Kentucky, you can talk to us. But in general, a lot of people, just because they're not physically present in state with an office, doesn't mean they don't actually practice law there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Very good. Very good insight. And then final one, how can people find out about you and connect with you, the work that you're doing, if they need to find a lawyer, find you guys, like how could that happen?
Sure. So we obviously have a web address that isn't registered in Louisiana because we don't sell CBD products, but you can find us at vicentecederberg.com, or I know through the information you've been posting. Mm-hmm. And you can find us, myself, my email address is listed, first name, last name at Vicente Cederberg. So definitely reach out.
Thanks so much for listening to this week's show. Please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. And if you enjoyed this, leave us a 5-star review. Make sure that you share this episode on your social media and tag us in the Instagram stories. You can find us wherever you go on social media. Just look up Cannabis Business Minds. Have an idea for the show or something that you want to talk about? Shoot us an email at podcast@cannabisbusinessminds.com.